Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council audio podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Today, we're going to speak with John Reed. John is the CEO and co-founder of Whitefield Global. John, how you doing this afternoon?
Great. Thank you for having me on.
Well, absolutely. And thanks for joining us. And we're going to kind of get a real basic overview here first of Whitefield Global, what you guys do, what the target is. And then we're going to go into some of your background as well, John. But let's start with Whitefield Global. What is it you guys do? And how is it that you work that in with the hemp industry?
So Whitefield was actually founded completely for the hemp industry. Mm-hmm. We actually started in 2019 on the CBD side. Unfortunately, got in just as the market decided it wanted to tank. So we've just been living the true grind for 4 years now. But about 2 years ago, we started our expansion into the fiber industry. And we are just about to launch and have our first fiber processing facility in operation in Idaho here within about 2 weeks.
That's exciting. And how long has that been in the process, the actual Idaho facility?
I'd say the Idaho facility, about 8 months. We started contracting acres in last season. We thought we were going to be going into a facility in Nebraska, and it just didn't work out. But through a partnership we formed with one of our growers in Idaho, we were putting a facility up there in our partnership with Tristan Sponseller, who is Idaho's largest hemp grower as of now. He does almost 50% of all the hemp production in Idaho right now.
Well, and obviously Idaho could be considered a remote part of the United States as when it comes to, you know, business and commerce, that sort of thing. So I guess go a little more in depth on why you chose Idaho. Obviously, you've got the connections there. Is it more of a benefit there in other ways as well?
No, not necessarily more of a benefit than a lot of the other areas. It's really just the right circumstances, the right partner, and the right location opened up that work well on what I would call a bootstrap startup side of our business. We haven't brought in any major investors outside of our own capital. So it's just what we could do on our budget to get what we would call probably one of the first larger scale facilities in the country.
John, when we go back to the beginning of this interview, you mentioned that you started in the CBD side of the industry, and now you're moving over to the fiber side. You've got this processing plant in Idaho opening up. Let's start from the beginning. What was your fascination with getting in the CBD side in the first place, and how did that not work out for you?
Well, so to back up a little bit further, you know, I've been in agriculture since 2020, or since 2000, I mean, so 20 plus years, and most of it in the crop insurance and the risk management world. Did another startup in the crop insurance space that we sold in 2017. And right after we sold that, we actually got asked to create a risk management program for a bunch of hemp growers in Colorado. So that's really what got us into the space. Part of our due diligence at the time, obviously the market was great, everything was exciting and booming. Mm-hmm. So we decided as we were getting into it, well, if we're going to insure and take on this risk, then we should definitely dig into the supply chains, dig into all the production management practices, and just make sure we understood everything. And with that, at the same time, Illinois started to become legal to grow. So we decided, hey, on our farm, we need to go ahead and grow a little bit. So we started with 2 acres in the first year, expanded that to over 100 the second year. And at the same time, got into the processing side. And actually, you know, it's been a struggle and a grind, but we actually see light at the end of the tunnel. We've never closed the doors or stopped. Mm-hmm. We've just continued to push our way through. And we're at the point now, we've tried a few different extraction machines on the CBD side. And actually, we just acquired another new one, and we're pushing about 1,000 liters a week out right now. And, you know, it's just been, yeah, you just do what you have to do to get through. But fortunately, we're starting to see some market prices increase, and that side of our business is starting to become healthy. So we're excited to actually see that moving. And at the same time, the fibers, you know, coming online. And so we're hoping at the right time, we're kind of hitting that perfect storm of, you know, we've made it through some of the tough times, that hopefully we're going to start catching a wave on the upside again for both the CBD and on the fiber side. But it all started because we were asked to create a risk management program for farmers, which is kind of our initial expertise that I think as a company and in the industry was really lacking. There is the federal crop program, but It really, because some of the limitations that were put on the program by the government, it's not necessarily what's needed to fill in the risk and protect the growers currently. And that's what we focused on, is how do we fill in that gap or create a totally separate program. So we couple that with just our growing expertise and our risk management expertise. We think it kind of gives us an edge to help bring new opportunity and new markets, because we can help mitigate and hopefully minimize some of the downside a farmer could face as they start to learn how to grow a new crop.
And so, and folks, folks listening to this podcast and they have that interest, how can you help them and how can they seek that help from you?
So right now we only work with guys that are contracting to grow with us. Unfortunately, because everything has kind of slowed down so much, the risk management is very difficult to hit. We have probably another season before we can really start. We had it out on the market. We had to take it back off of the market for a while because we were not getting to the scale that we needed to actually garner the reinsurance support that we need. And the reinsurers, for people that don't understand reinsurance, basically we have the primary carrier that takes on the risk, and then most of the risk is actually laid off to the reinsurers, which are kind of that backstop. Mm-hmm. For the insurance industry. And there's all sorts of other layers that happen after that. But in order to have that, you've got to have a lot of diversity and be able to scale that program. And typically it takes 8,000 to 10,000 acres at a minimum just to launch a program. Ideally, you want to have about 50,000 to 100,000 acres in order to feel like you really spread that risk far enough. And so we're working ourselves back up to get you to that point of if we can get to 8,000 acres of contracted growing. And we're open to working with other companies, but our biggest thing we've found is the guys that we've endured in the past that have not grown with us or with that partner company of ours produced a lot of losses. We don't feel like they have strong enough guidance and agronomic support. So part of our underwriting process now and moving forward will always be they've got to be working either with us specifically on a contract or with somebody that we call an approved contracting partner. In order to even take our insurance. That way we can make sure the growers have the adequate support and don't just make careless decisions that then they don't mean to. It just sometimes happens because of lack of growing experience. So that's a key part for us to get support long-term, is making sure guys have that support they need to grow.
And when the initial rush hit, there were a lot of people out there wanting to enter the industry. A lot of people that did not have the resources, did not have the proper land, just kind of jumping in head first. And then, of course, the market, the realization of the return on investment plus COVID. Do you see that the market has shrunk, or is there more interest out there? Or is it, again, has it shrunk to the folks that are more serious, the folks that can financially get through those sorts of times?
Yeah, the market has drastically shrunk. And I think that was really good. You had kind of hit on it there. We had a lot of people, a lot of people called it the Wild West. and it somewhat was. There was anybody that had $50,000 or $1 million they wanted to sink into it did, and most likely they lost it. Mm-hmm. The good part is I think we've shrunk the market significantly. I think the people that are left standing in the market right now, they're close to financially healthy if they're not. But most importantly, I feel the people that are left that we're seeing and dealing with are definitely legitimate business individuals. And what's interesting when you look at it then from the farming standpoint, people will definitely have the guard up a little bit. But when you really talk to them about, hey, this is what happened, this is why it's happened, this is where the market is shifting to and how it's moving forward, you actually get people getting excited about it again, because there really is a big thirst and a big hunger for a new crop opportunity in the country. And people have to realize that this is not a lottery ticket crop like it was in 2012 and 14, which that was still only a limited lottery ticket for a certain amount of people. Mm-hmm. They've got to realize that there is some really strong financial upside right now, but there has to be stronger financial upside for a new crop versus what everybody's used to. They can't expect that, oh, hey, I'm going to make $5,000 an acre. No, it's unrealistic. Like, if we can put a person into a situation, whether it's CBD or industrial hemp, and help them figure out, hey, all right, corn, soybeans, maybe wheat, maybe I'm making $150 or $400 an acre. Well, if I can help you make more like $600 to $900 an acre in these first few years, Well, that's a strong return for learning a new growing style, especially if you can start adding in some risk management practices for them. Because long term, every crop's got to be able to compete against the other crop, and that's the hardest part for a new industry. Is that we see a lot of companies start their pricing based off of what they think they have to sell their finished good or their offtakes for, but a lot of times that pricing doesn't back into what it takes for the farmer to want to make that change. Mm-hmm. So it's just a real interesting dynamic watching a new industry evolve and come around. And it'd be fun to see. And it's interesting to look at the history of how these other industries, whether it was steel or the auto industry, how did they get into it? A little bit different there is they didn't really have competitors on the market at the time. They were just changing the industry, and we're trying to change the industry, but having to deal with all these other competitors of other commodities. So it's just a fun dynamic right now to learn how to navigate.
Well, and as you head into the fiber side of things, when you talk about that return, would you say the CBD side and the industrial side would be about the same, or are you going to expect a better return on the CBD side, and will that change?
It's really hard to say right now. The CBD market is definitely a different animal on its own. Because you've had so many people go under and so much product flooded into the market. Mm-hmm. I think long-term, because it needs to be treated more as a unique craft style grow, you don't need 100,000 acres of CBD production. We only need, maybe 20, 30, 40,000 acres of production annually to meet what's needed. We're on the industrial fiber side. In order for us to actually get this market to scale, we're going to need hundreds of thousands to millions of acres to actually start meeting the demand that's there long term. So I think it's just two totally different growers, and I wouldn't even want to try to compare them. I think there's strong upside, but industrial fiber is going to lead to really be stronger for the row crop style grower, because it can roll in, easy to grow. I think there's row crop style grows available for CBD long term, but it's also really going to take, it's just a lot more labor intensive grow regardless of how they do it.
Well, and you say the fiber side is, or the industrial side, is going to need hundreds of millions or millions of acres to cover that. Is that realistic? Is that going to happen? How long would it take to get to where you think it needs to be?
Well, it's going to take a while. It's nothing happens overnight. No matter how hard we want it to or how much we push for it to happen overnight, I think it's going to take us still a number of years before we get to a million acres in the country. Mm-hmm. The biggest bottleneck is, I think, the hunger and the opportunity is there on the growing side. There's definitely some hurdles and comfort levels we have to get growers to. But the biggest bottleneck is really on the processing side, is we can't be sitting here processing 1,000 pounds an hour or 2,000 pounds an hour on a system. We got to figure out how do we scale systems so we can start processing, instead of 2 or 3,000 acres a year, but how do we get to the point where one facility is processing 15 to 20,000 acres a year? Then we can start hitting some scalability in the market. So, I would hope that we could hit a million acres inside of the next 3 to 5 years, probably mm-hmm. realistically on that longer runway, 5-year window. But, mm-hmm. It's going to take a lot of collaboration across the industry. There's a lot of companies experimenting with different types of equipment. You got to commend everybody in the industry that's working on it. I think we feel that with our partnership with Hemp Ventures on their processing equipment and the work that they've done with the USDA over the last couple of years, I think we feel like we have one of the better technology applications in the market as we roll this out. We have pretty big visions to scale Whitefield and grow. We're starting in Idaho because of what I would call the perfect storm up here for us and aligned for us to put a facility in there, but we have much larger visions that, we got to do one market at a time. But, from whether it's a Whitefield controlled facility to us growing and kind of creating partnerships or dealership type opportunities, we really want to scale and grow, especially across the Midwest, but multi-state. I think for this industry to really grow, you've got to have your farming application, you've got to have a strong knowledge that you have to grow a market, you've got to have your processor. But at the end of the day, these processing facilities need to be anchored and tied to our buyers, whether that's into the nonwovens, whether it's construction industry. You really need to have yourself positioned that it's almost vertically integrated at a facility, so we're having to, so we can cut out a lot of logistics and a lot of the issues of shipping things across the country. So it's just a long process to get there, but as an industry, we've just got to figure out how to work together and take everybody's different visions and still figure out how do you work together, even though we operate different from a lot of the other processors.
Well, again, Whitefield Global opening its first processing plant in Idaho within a month or in about a month or so. We're going to get you back on and discuss that after you get it open. You've still got a long way to go, I'm sure, realistically, to make that happen. But what kind of output, what kind of productivity do you expect from that facility once you get it up and rolling?
We're targeting here at the end in the first 60 days to be at about three tons an hour. Mm-hmm. We think that facility and that the machinery have can potentially maybe get up to 4 tons an hour. Once we get to there, then we can start figuring out how do we take that next step to 5 or 6 tons. Like we think we have a lot of the equipment we have has a much larger significant capacity past that, but there's just so much you've got to learn, whether it's from its just the processes, streamlining everything internally. You're talking about a lot of bales. You know, every bale of hemp we bring in weighs 1,000 pounds. So, you know, you try to run, you know, essentially 6,000 or 8,000 pounds an hour through a system. That's a lot of also logistics you got to work through, a lot of coordination with your growers. So there's just a lot of steps that everybody's battling and learning through and trying to figure out how do we streamline it the best that we can. Fortunately, hopefully, we're targeting either next week or the week after we'll be live. We're about 60% through our installation now. So John Lupien and Ryan have been doing a great job of leading our install with Hemp Ventures. So we're close. We've got a lot of material lined up. We have all the acres we contracted from last year ready for us to start bringing them in to process. So it's just a matter of pulling the trigger so we can move.
Excellent. Well, exciting. John, is there anywhere else we need to go here in this conversation? Any other news that we need to, that we would need to get from you?
No, not necessarily. You know, we are looking for new partnerships and relationships across the industry, whether it's trying to figure out how to work with and support other processors to working with people needing material to help them learn how to open up new markets with new growers. You know, I'd say, we are pretty much open to conversations with everybody. You know, we've been kind of standoffish the last couple of years. It's primarily for the fact that we didn't feel that we should over-engage and mm-hmm. do too much until we actually could be actionable on something. And we like to talk and learn about everything, but at the end of the day, we are a group that prefers action over anything else. And now that we feel like we're in a spot that we can help take action with groups, we're ready to start building out an industry and forming more partnerships and relationships with groups across the country. So hopefully we can do that moving forward.
All right. Excellent. John Reed, CEO and co-founder of Whitefield Global. John, an exciting time for you and the folks there at Whitefield Global. And again, we want to get you back on. I know Jamie is going to have that rescheduled to get you back on and discuss, after you get it open. And we want to hear what's going on there and maybe any glitches you may have experienced. But I'm sure it's going to be smooth sailing. At least we've got our fingers crossed it's going to be smooth sailing. And, we continue to advance in the industry.
Yeah, thank you. We got our fingers crossed too, but there's always a snake in the grass. It's just a matter of where is it at?
Oh, there you go. That's what makes it exciting and fun, right, John?
That's right. Yeah. We'd love to come back and love to get some of our other team members on the, involved in this too. So it's, I am, just the first person to talk to, but we have a great team. So the more everybody talks to our team, I think the better we are as a company and in an industry.
Absolutely. Well, we look forward to following through with it, John, and we will talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right, John, thanks so much. And we do look forward to talking to you again soon. And that is going to do it for this edition of the Midwest Hemp Council audio podcast. I'm Jason Dozier. Until next time, have a good one, have a safe one, and we'll see you then. So long, everybody.